Welcome to JGL Law for You. JGL Law for You is a podcast by lawyers, but not for lawyers only. On JGL Law for You, we will be discussing a wide array of topics to help you navigate the many legal processes, developments in the law, other current events, and how they may affect you, your family, or your business. Welcome, everybody. I'm really excited today. I've got two of my partners at Joseph Greenwald & Lake talking family law, specifically no-fault divorce, the pluses and the minuses. Lindsay Parvis has focused her practice over the last 20 years on helping clients navigate some of life's biggest challenges: divorce, custody, domestic violence, and financial matters like alimony, child support, and property division. She makes complex information and advice understandable and manageable to her clients. Lindsay's services include attorney representation and advocacy, parent coordination, and mediation. We also have Chris Castellano, who's been practicing family law for over a decade. His focus includes the full range of family law matters, from simple uncontested divorces to contested matters involving business valuations and other disputes. Welcome, you guys. I'm glad you're here.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Good morning.
Yeah, this is going to be fun for me. So let's talk about no-fault divorce and what, first of all, what it is. And then I want to talk a little bit about history in Maryland and history overall. So what exactly, Lindsay, let's start with you. What exactly is no-fault divorce? What does that mean?
In short, it means that when one or both spouses are choosing to get divorced, they can get divorced without there needing to be some significant rupture in the relationship, some significant bad act that has to be pointed to get a divorce. That's fault divorce territory.
Where someone is blamed for something, or someone alleges that the other spouse caused something or did something that resulted in the party separating.
That's right. No-fault divorce is about granting a divorce without having a requirement that there be some bad act that requires a divorce. So some of those kind of bad acts, fault grounds historically, are things like adultery and desertion. So I see it as some forward progress.
Yeah, I mean, in the old days, you know, more than 50 years or so ago, there was no such thing as no-fault divorce anywhere. People had to allege it, that someone had done something to cause a rupture, right? And that was a bad thing, right? I did a little research, right? And back in the 50s, I understand, in 1960s, primarily as a result of the feminist movement, it enabled women who prior to that were unable to get divorced. They were stuck in marital situations with violent husbands, abusive relationships, and they couldn't get out because they couldn't prove fault, right?
Sure. It's the fault divorce grounds is really sort of kind of historically, as I see it, divorce was an extremely limited option. You could otherwise read it as not an option. And then it became an option, yes, especially for women who were stuck in really terrible marriages and also at that time had very questionable property rights, and to give some sort of structure for them to be able to get out of those relationships and have some property interest. And, you know, this shift toward no-fault grounds is really, I think, trying to bring divorce into a much more modern age around not having the state have a vested interest in keeping people married and in relationships that they may not want to be in, but instead having the spouses themselves have way more choice, way more say over whether this is a relationship they're staying in or not.
And I know this has been of late a particular hot potato, and I want to get to that in a minute. But Chris, let me ask you a question. Tell us briefly, you know, what was the law in Maryland prior to October 1, 2023? How has it changed, and why do you think it's changed?
Well, with regard to getting a divorce, we had two different divorces. We had a limited divorce, and that was struck down by the legislature. And we also had, as we're discussing here, the absolute divorce and the grounds for divorce. And what we've done, the best way to describe it is simplifying the absolute divorce by getting rid of all the fault-based grounds. So you're talking your adultery, desertion, you know, insanity, cruelty, excessively vicious conduct, and simplifying that down to what a lot of people have heard of with irreconcilable differences. And we've also maintained what was an existing grounds for divorce of a mutual consent, which means that the parties entered into an agreement. And we have reduced our separation grounds for divorce from what was 1 year separation to now 6 months separation.
So do people now in Maryland have to be separated to ask for a divorce or no? On these new no-fault type grounds?
Well, you still have to be separated, but the question is, how do we define separation? Previously, and this was a difference between the limited and absolute divorce, previously, with a limited divorce, you could be quote-unquote separated while living in your same house. That was not true for an absolute divorce. And so what the legislature has done by getting rid of limited and changing our 1 year separation to 6 month separation, they've also allowed separation within the same house. The concept is holding yourself out as being separated.
All right. So people could be under the same roof in separate rooms or in different parts of the house and potentially still be able to file for divorce based on one of these new grounds.
Well,
as we understand it.
Go ahead, Lindsay.
And to chime in on that, you know, the new grounds are interesting because we have this 6 month separation ground, which allows for divorce while folks are living under the same roof. There's some specific language in the statute. So you got that piece. But then we've got irreconcilable differences, which doesn't require any separation at all. And then we've got and have had mutual consent divorce, which allows people who have a written and signed settlement agreement resolving everything between them to get a divorce. And there was no requirement and still is no requirement under mutual consent to have a separation or even for them to have ended really the romantic side of their relationship, I'll say.
Mm-hmm. Intimacy, they're not being intimate together during some period of time. Right?
That's right.
Let me ask you this. The reasons for the change, generally speaking, reasons for the change are what? To go from having these fault grounds to now not having these non-fault related grounds. Jump on in. Go ahead, Chris.
Well, specific to Maryland, from what I understand, is one of the significant motivating factors is access to justice. Right. And the ability to get a divorce in a more streamlined manner. I think that there was a lot of questions revolving around how to secure an absolute divorce. There was a lot of issues ranging from, you know, how do I get out of a house? I can't get out. There's no money to get out. And what grounds am I supposed to file for? Do I need an attorney to do X, Y, and Z? And I think a lot of the motivating factors underpinning the change in the grounds for divorce is just that, simplifying the process.
So in theory, we wanted to simplify things, but there's a public policy issue hanging out there. But there's another thought to this, right? Is that this isn't such a good idea to allow people to make it easy to get out of a marriage, right? So Lindsay, weigh in.
So I think when it comes to marriage and the way I'm seeing this come together, and part of my lens is from having been and still now being a legislative committee co-chair for the family section of the Maryland State Bar. And my co-chair was significantly involved and I provided lots of support on this particular legislative change in Maryland, right? So my lens on this is one of how involved and how controlling the state is around marriage in order to try to advance some sort of moral or values around marriage, whatever that those morals and values might be. Versus what I'm seeing as a much more modern take on it is couples are choosing to get married couples can choose to get divorced. Let's have the state, let's have government not be part of the decision-making about whether or not a divorce should be granted. And instead, let's have, if the state has to be involved, that looks like couples who are unable to agree upon the topics like what's going to happen with the kids and parenting time and legal decision-making, what happens for support like alimony and child support, what happens with property. If they can't agree, then a judge is deciding for them. Instead of having a judge focused on whether or not they should be getting a divorce, have the judge be focused on what should these outcomes be, right? And to take those very contrasting perspectives, one of kind of the past, should a divorce even be granted? Or should this couple continue to stay married? Really, you know, opens up, well, what are the morals and the values that are being sort of, that are shaping that, right? And whose morals and whose values are shaping that? And I think that this change in the law is trying to shift away from having other people's morals, other people's values around what marriage should look like being set to the side, and really have the couple themselves making the choices.
All right. So Chris, don't we, I'm listening to Lindsay, but don't we as a society, not as a government, but as a society, don't we have an interest in maintaining families, intact families, an interest in people who get married to try to have them stay together and build a life together? Don't, you know, isn't that something that in large part the country was built on, right?
I think even more fundamental than that, I think the basis for every civilization, even going back to ancient civilization, is founded on the, you know, the very concept of continuing the human race, right? And it's that fundamental concept that, you know, marriage and unions between people and growing families and then growing the society, growing civilization comes out of. So I think that every government body has a vested interest in increasing its own population.
And doesn't this no fault divorce, is it like a get out of jail free card in the Monopoly game? You know, okay, I had a bad weekend, so I'm going to call my lawyer and say we have irreconcilable differences and I went out. Isn't it just make it too easy? So, Lindsay, I mean, it's like turning a light on now, right?
Well, as a counterpoint, first of all, marriage has evolved. Not everyone is getting married. Welcome to 2023 as we are ready to step into 2024. And who gets to get married has evolved over time. Our laws need to evolve too. If we continue to have the same old laws that existed hundreds of years ago, where would we be now? So we need to step into it. To the idea of, and your question, David, about whether or not irreconcilable differences allows sort of a on-off switch on, are we married today? Are we divorced tomorrow? The reality of it is it's not that simple. Because in order to get divorced in Maryland, one still has to file in court. A court still has to grant a divorce. So if someone wakes up in the morning and they can't stand that their partner did X, Y, or Z, you know, the coffee you handed me was cold, I don't want to be married to you anymore. The reality is to actually get divorced, it is a process. And I think that process between the filing fees to open a case in court and if the couple can get on the same page or not about what happens with the finances, what happens with any kids. If they don't get on the same page, then they have a trial and a judge decides for them. those are a lot of hurdles for those couples who, if they are out there, wake up in the morning and they're like, not doing this today because of some minor infraction, you know, some minor thing. I don't see it.
Okay. So Chris, let me ask you this. When we had grounds, you know, more fault grounds for divorce, I mean, I know I always told my clients that most times it didn't make any difference anyway, because I explained, you know, grounds is like a car, right? From getting from married town to divorce land. That's really pretty much all that the grounds were in most cases, because most times it wouldn't make any, it didn't matter financially how things broke out. It didn't really matter generally in terms of custody and access stuff when it came to the kids, unless there was some actions within those grounds that would be harmful to a child, or there was domestic violence or threat thereof or whatever. So if the grounds didn't really make a difference as to how money and property were divided, then what difference does it make whether we have grounds or we don't?
Well, that's exactly right. And to Lindsay's point, and to one of the earlier topics of, you know, simplifying, at the end of the day, we almost have to wonder, is this a change in, you know, almost semantics more than anything else? Because, you know, for as long as I've been practicing, you know, we could file for cruelty or excessively vicious or even adultery, but at the end of the day, just like you said, you know, you'd tell the clients, well, it's going to take about, you know, 15 months to get to the trial date, and so by that time we're going to amend for a 1-year divorce, 1-year separation as it is. And, you know, so is there a genuine difference here? And that, I think, we're just going to have to wait and see. At the end of the day, to Lindsay's point, you're still going to have, you know, hurt feelings between the parties, and you're still going to have the facts that are going to be alleged in the complaint, because you can't just say, as I understand it, irreconcilable differences and leave it at that. The statute requires adding some facts. You know, there's a question about how much or how little facts you add, but ultimately, the way I see it, and I can't conceive of any, you know, different way of looking at it, is that you're going to have to put what is essentially the same facts that you would under the fault-based grounds of yesteryear in this irreconcilable difference. I think the major sea change with this new version of 7103 is the 6-month separation.
So Chris, okay, so let me just follow up on that, and then I've got a question for Lindsay. Why does it matter, 12 months or 6 months? You know, because again, if I'm looking to get a divorce, and I don't know what I'm going to do in terms of where I'm going to live, why don't I just plead these irreconcilable differences and then let nature take its course? Who cares whether it's 6 months, 12 months, or 3 days? I mean, you got to prove it ultimately, but by pleading it, it gets you into court, gets this process that Lindsay was talking about started. The clock is ticking. My spouse has to file a response, and then we go through whatever the process happens to be in our jurisdiction. So why does it make any difference? I can always amend, right? I can always change my pleading later, right?
Well, you can always amend. I think with the 6-month separation, you're still going to be required to show that you are holding yourself out as separated. So I don't think that you could kind of pick and choose between one or the other, because in a lot of circumstances, particularly with, you know, a spouse in a situation where, you know, it's a tough situation or an abuse situation, etc., you know, they're likely not going to be holding themselves out as separated.
Lindsay, you raise, go ahead. You go ahead.
Yeah, sure. So a thought on this, a couple. One is, I can tell you some background from how this evolved in Maryland. The short version is, we needed sponsors in both chambers, so the House and the Senate. And those sponsors had different visions about what this law could look like. So even though one could say, why file for separation if you can get divorced on irreconcilable differences? We have both, because that's what was needed to help bring about these changes. That's all to the good. Another lens on this is that it has been so defined in Maryland law with some questions that have evolved more recently, that separation means living separate and apart, separate rooms, not cohabitating, not being intimate, that having very clear language in the statute about what a separation could be while you're living under the same home, like, I think it will help judges and magistrates who are deciding these cases to be able to look at it, see some clear language. And if someone chooses to ask for divorce based on separation, then they have concrete information they can work from. One of the things I'm curious about is, will we see the 6-month separation be amended out of the law at some future point in time? Because it may just not be needed. But we have it here and now, and I think it provides good guidance to judges and magistrates.
Yeah. And I'm going to stop us right there, because what I want to do is have you guys back to talk about these jurisdictional issues and what these problems and issues that they create for couples and families. But we're going to hold that, so that way I make you come back again next time. In the meantime, folks, let everyone out there know how they can get hold of you. Chris, you first this time.
Yeah, certainly. I work closely with, you know, Lindsay, and, you know, we're on the same team. You can get a hold of me at Joseph Greenwald and Lake, 240-399-7881. You can get me right on the phone and talk to me with any questions you have.
Yeah, and I enjoy working on the team with Chris, and I can be reached at 240-399-7900.
All right. Well, thank you, guys. I think we could keep this discussion going over coffee, over lunch, over drinks, and well into the night. But we do want to have you back. Folks, I hope you've enjoyed this. This is a very timely and interesting topic. And this is JGL Law for You.